Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And now,
it's time for
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Welcome to Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast. I'm Mike Sweeney.
I'm Jesse Gaskell, and we are friends.
Co-workers. Yes. And co-workers. When does that ever happen?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess all the time. But anyway.
When all you do is work.
Exactly. I know. Well, that used to be the case. Now it's a strike lifestyle.
Yeah. We're on strike. Yep. We used to be writers for Conan. You were the head writer for a long time.
Well, yeah. Yes, I was. No one else would do it. Have you been picketing a lot lately?
Yeah, I've been picketing. I've been actually going all the way to the West Side studios.
Really?
Really far from where I live. Yeah.
What are you running from?
I've been trying to meet up with some people I haven't seen in a while.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah. You know, it's a good excuse. Yeah.
Yes. Are these writer friends you're meeting, literally meeting on the picket line, or people you're meeting who live on the West Side?
They're writer friends who also live on the West Side. Well, and right. One of them, I just met Robin Schiff, who was my WGA mentor when I joined the WGA.
Oh.
And we interviewed her on this podcast because she was Conan's Groundlings teacher.
Oh, right. Yes, yes. But she was your WGA mentor?
Yeah. They gave me a mentor when I joined.
Why did you get a... I didn't get a mentor.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that it was a newer program probably when I came along.
Have you had a lot of mentors in your life? You know what? I bet you attracted mentors. Like, you just seem like a mentor magnet. Like, everyone's like, no, I want to mentor her.
I'd consider you a mentor.
No, but I mean someone who actually helps you.
You are that.
There are so many people who like always talk about their mentors. And I no one ever wanted anything to do with me. I don't think I ever had a mentor.
I think they just didn't think you needed help. They were like, you're fine.
I feel like I was cheated in life of a major experience. No one ever wanted to take me under their wing. It was like,
sort of a weird relationship because I don't know if you ever actually formalize it. Like, this was part of a program the WGA was running, but like people don't say, oh, would you like to be my mentee? No. I mean, that maybe is, creeps say that.
Creeps say that. Absolutely. I would have been happy if a creep wanted to mentor me. Anybody.
Oh, to groom you?
A creep mentor, or if I was being groomed by someone. None of that. Nothing. No love, no attention. Even
what if Conan thinks he's your mentor?
Oh.
Uh-oh.
No. No, because he'd be mentoring someone to be a host, right?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, sure, he mentors everyone.
Or just to be in comedy. I don't know. He likes to give advice.
I think he mentors all the writers.
He does.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I was looking for something to complain about. So what else going on?
So we've been house hunting and it's terrible. I mean, it's just insane. There was an article in the LA Times this morning about how awful it is here
You're looking in LA. I was going to say, as long as you're not looking in LA.
Oh yeah. No, if I was, wish I was looking in Kansas City, but I mean, if you go further outside of Los Angeles, I mean, we're already pretty, we're as far east you can be and still be in Los Angeles City.
Yes.
But, Sona Movsesian is trying to get me to move to Altadena.
Where she lives, right?
Where she lives, which is even further east.
It's further east and north.
But we did go to see a house there because it was like, oh, we could, in our budget, have a house with this beautiful, like, landscaped yard with a pool. Mm-hmm. We could have a pool in Altadena.
Oh, my God. And Altadena is nestled against these beautiful mountains.
It is. It's right up against the Angeles National Forest.
Right.
Sona said there are bears all the time that wander through the neighborhood. So she checks next door to see, make sure there are no bears outside.
Before she lets her kids out to play.
Yeah. And also you can't get insurance because of the wildfires.
Right.
So those are some of the downsides.
Those are downsides. So yeah, you're not going to go to Altadena. That's what it sounds like.
We're not ready yet, but I'll from time to time, I'll get a little text from Sona. That's hey, look, we've got a little free library now.
Oh yeah. No, that's, I know.
Well, yeah. I mean, I know we'll be fine wherever we are.
Oh yeah.
And actually today's guest famously lived in a 2-bedroom apartment in New York with like 7 people in it.
Yeah.
His wife and 2 kids and 5 kids.
Five kids. Which I thought that was against the law, but I guess you're allowed to have as many kids. Oh no, that's China. No, but even they rescinded that law. I guess you're allowed to have as many kids as you want, but that's crazy that they live like that. And
that's a reality show.
Yeah. He did it just to get material for his act.
Okay. Well, that makes
sense. But I'm glad he did it because he's hilarious. We're talking about Jim Gaffigan.
Yes, Jim Gaffigan. Really funny, obviously, stand-up comic. Many time Conan guest and was even in some Conan sketches early on, remote.
Yes, yep.
Here's Jim Gaffigan.
Hi,
Jim.
How are you?
For being here.
Thanks for having me.
When was the last time you two saw each other?
I don't know. Probably the last time you were on the Conan show.
Yeah.
That's when we agree to see each other.
Isn't that
backstage?
It is crazy. So, you know, Mike, I've been doing stand up forever, and he was the crowd work king. Mike Sweeney. Mike Sweeney's on. Go check it out. Yeah. Mike Sweeney's on.
go put money in your meter.
And so I feel like I'm talking to a comedy legend here.
This is how he opens every podcast.
He knows that he was a killer. Mike Sweeney, a couple different Mike Sweeney jokes. One is my mother was a nurse. And so instead of pornography, I would look at her medical book. And so now I can only get aroused if a woman has a hatchet in her head or something like that. Was that kind of what the joke was?
Oh, I think a giant goiter.
Yes, a giant goiter.
Yeah, a nice big sweaty goiter.
It's also the worst thing in the world for someone to repeat a joke back to you and butcher it.
I didn't remember it till you said it. So blissfully, like a bad dental experience, my brain is erased.
Yes.
All those old jokes.
That's a victimless crime because then you get to blame it on the delivery and you get to blame it on the writing.
That was actually the best version of it I've ever heard. I like the hatchet in the head. It was a book on forensics. I remember the first time I saw you was at the comic strip on Second Avenue, and you were, I think it was your first time there possibly. And was that the first club you went to? I mean, if we're going to go down memory lane, when was that the first club you got in at the comic strip, or was it a different club in New York City?
Struggled to get in there.
Really?
But I remember, so like I don't know. It's all such a blur. It was 30 years ago, which is ironic because we're only 31.
Right, right, guys. audio medium. Yeah. But you were funny right away. There's some comics.
Yeah, you mentioned that because I asked about that. And you said there's a couple people that just immediately, they come out of the womb being good at stand-up. And it sounds like that was Jim.
Well, thank you. That's very nice.
And all the other, you were great right away. And, you know, Chris Rock and John Stewart and Ray Romano, where guys were just like, seemed to just go off the shore and immediately they're surfing.
Didn't have that year of bombing. Yes.
No, I if they were bombing, they were doing it. Maybe you were doing secretly. It on Long Island, but not when I saw you. Yes. Yeah.
It's like, I know this is inside Conan, but it's really just about stand-up comedy in 1993.
It's very specific
honestly,
year.
You've listened to the podcast.
Sometimes we do divert in that direction.
So wait a minute. So inside Conan,
we'll
is
get
this
to it.
Because the show, the Conan show, the different versions of it.
Uh-huh.
Was so instrumental in my life, really. It is just amazing how, and also it's like even some of, you know, you'd show up, you'd see friends there. And also, I mean, Conan was really good. Like, you know, like you'd watch the opening monologue.
Right.
And everyone would laugh. I mean, I know he sucked at the beginning, but everyone sucks at the beginning.
But
it is amazing. And because I did that Pale Force thing,
right.
I remember, you know, I had a frequency to go there and there was to witness and also, you know, the dynamic of Conan and Letterman. I also like doing Conan and Letterman because I had always kind of romanticized hosting a late night show. And I was like, oh, this is a horrible job. You know, like it's a really,
you have to go every day, really,
you know, and you have to be on and, you know, both Conan and Letterman would, you get a certain amount of feedback, like probably to the outside world, the feedback that they get from the audience every night on the show would be amazing, but you can measure it in like a really a minutia. So like when they don't get, you get spoiled by really good audiences. So like both Conan and Letterman would be like this crowd. And you're like, whereas with Letterman, if he didn't like the crowd, he would just be in a bad mood
on camera. On camera. Yeah.
Well, he would just kind of, you could kind of see it in his eyes. Whereas he also had done it much longer, but there, I remember watching Conan and I'm sure you guys know about this when like when Conan would have a guest that was, and they were usually actors that thought they were funny, that were really not funny, and Conan would save them. They would be careening down this path of like utter humiliation. Right. And I would see Conan save these people, pick them up out of the water, turn it on himself, and save them.
Yeah, he's generous.
And I remember just being like, I was like, oh my gosh, that's so impressive. I don't know. I just, that really stayed with me when I would watch him do that.
That was one of my early impressions after working there was, you know, sometimes there'd be ideas for stuff for comedy and he'd be like, it's too negative. And it's similar to what you're saying. Like out there, if someone's floundering, kind of the easy way to go would be to pile on.
Yeah.
And
to let them drown.
You're right. He always had this kind of wanting to be a gracious host.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that helped drive him to kind of try to save everyone on the couch at that time, you know?
Yeah. And he had, and by the way, there is, that's not to say that, I mean, it's not my style, but like the whole ribbing of, you know, that kind of like giving each other shit thing. It's not like, I understand the value in that, but it's also just, it's a safer bet. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then you look at like at Jimmy Fallon, where he's like you know, it's like it's warmth overload. And I don't mean that in a negative way. Right. You know what I mean? And so, but also Conan was so funny that it was, I mean, now it sounds like he's dead.
Right.
For Conan.
Well, no.
But Conan was also funny, like, yes. I do these bits on the panel, and then sometimes occasionally he would throw a tag, and I'm like, dude, that's better than the whole joke I just did.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Well, you two had great chemistry right away.
Yeah.
So do you remember the first time you were on the show?
I think it might have been what I remember. I don't know if it was the very first time, but it was like what people don't realize is there is, among stand-up comedians, your publicists and management are always trying to get you on the couch, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And the thing is that no one tells you that when you get to the couch that you should be conversational, or it's a different task.
It is.
Than doing your jokes. So I know, like, I remember I did... I don't know if it was the first time, but I did the paneling thing. And I remember afterwards, I was like, oh, I was just doing jokes. Like, that's not how you do paneling.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there is something about the task of being a guest on a talk show where it has to, you can have predetermined things, but it has to be organic.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if it's just because in this thing, it's if it is what I'm thinking of, it's just me doing jokes.
Right? No, actually, it's a piece that was dug up.
Oh, wait a minute. Is it me and Andy and Conan?
Yes. And it's a pre-tape.
With
and
kids.
You're a network executive doing a focus group with children.
Yes.
Who were in, we did a show with an all child audience and it was a follow-up piece. Yes. And I had totally forgotten about it. And we just dug it up a few months ago. And there you are. You're kind of the star of
it.
It's 9 minutes long.
And you're 9 minutes long?
Yes. And you're,
you guys did not play a 9 minute thing.
I believe it's nine in those days. Back then, yes.
Yeah.
And you're great in it.
Wow.
And it's, I think it's a couple of years before, it was 1997. So it was a couple of years before you came back to do stand-up on the show.
So you were acting in it.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So there was also a bit that was, I mean, which is really kind of funny given, because it was the show was ahead of its time in a lot of ways in that there was, and it was probably around the same time period. And because it was self-aware, which is kind of Conan's sensibility. Right. And it was talking about Conan and Andy, and they were going to add diversity to the show. And so they added me.
I don't remember that. So that's
instead of
great.
This Irish Catholic from Boston and this this Protestant
Lutheran.
From Illinois, they added me and they said I was a Mormon, you know, and it was...
That rings
a
bell.
At the rehearsal, I flubbed my line and Conan was like, maybe we should cut it. And I'm like, I'm not gonna mess up.
He said that out loud. He usually waits till we're backstage to go, maybe we should cut that.
That's how you know he's not gonna cut it.
It was just such an easy line. And I think it's intimidating.
It is.
It's very, a lot of people are great in rehearsal. And then when the audience is added and the red light comes on, they get really panic.
So better to get it out in rehearsal.
Yes, get it over with.
Get those cobwebs
out. That was smart.
I don't know if this is what this is about, but I'm really curious because we are living through, I mean, with this strike and it's, there is part of me that feels like this is the worst thing that could happen to late night talk shows, this strike. So it's like, hey, you people that the remaining people that still have a habit of watching late night comedy or variety show kind of thing, you're now going to
wean you off of it. Yeah.
We're going to give you 3 months to find to get into Dateline.
Right.
You know what I mean? We're going to give you 3 months to find out.
It's a mop up operation.
What you're, yeah. what your HBO Max password is.
There's
you
know people, what I mean? It's, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
No, that's true.
I feel for Colbert and all these guys because mm-hmm. it's just like, it's pretty brutal. You know, yeah. like you have some momentum and you have these diehards, but mm-hmm. it's really my great brilliant observation is that, you know, I'm sure when they, you know, when they introduce television, they're like, oh, this is going to kill movies. And, right.
And radio.
In a way, yeah. And so in a way, this is finally like streaming the version of television is the final thing that's going to kill movies. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it has in mm-hmm. some right, ways. Right. And I'm not talking about like Marvel movies or some indie films. I'm talking about like the movie experience that I had growing up, which was, you know, as a teenager, you would go to a movie on a weekend because you couldn't go to a bar. Mm-hmm. You would, you know, and now teenagers sit in their parents' basement and eat right. an edible that uh-huh. they somehow can get wherever they want. And they don't have to go to a movie theater. Right. And their parents are like, we don't want you to go.
Friends. Yeah.
We don't want you to leave the property. No, it's...
Or they're playing video games.
Well, you know, so. Sometimes on Instagram, you know, these... It's like, well, check out this crazy, you know, variety TV, the Osmond Show from 75. And you're like, mm-hmm. yeah. that's crazy. And lately I've been like, is that... Are late night talk show clips going to be like that, like that in 15 years? Where it's like, wait, you'd sit on this ugly couch and uh-huh. why are those other two people on the couch and what is this, you know? Because you yeah, do wonder it's so where it's interesting. Headed. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is so, but like, do you guys have an instinct of what the next iteration of, because there is something, and also there's celebrities have their, you know, Jennifer Aniston's got her Instagram.
Right.
And Brad Pitt, like it used to be, you would see, oh, you know, like this celebrity Muriel Hemingway's right. going to be on the right. Tonight Show. It's like, I don't even know what she's like outside right. of the right. movies, right. you know?
Yeah.
And now it's like, we know everything. And they also have their own vodka and yes. tequila. Right. So right. it's like,
they're so much more accessible. And
too accessible.
They don't need the machinery of late night to promote anything anymore. Cause yeah, they can just go direct to consumers basically.
So, and you know, yeah. podcasts, I guess, have replaced it, right? There's a long form yeah. element mm-hmm. that has, and I'm sure you guys, like, it's so interesting. How often do you run into people? Cause I'm sure people, there's an audio version and a video version of this, yeah. right?
Right. Right.
And so there are people that, you don't know you from this, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what someone has said, told us.
Well, and I mean, as you're saying sure. this, I have had that thought cynically. I've thought, okay, podcasts have proliferated and then now every podcast is being filmed and now is that going to be kind of the new late night show?
Right.
But we sort of circumvented, yes. like, we found a much cheaper way to make it. There's no writers, there's
yep.
no,
yep.
You know, stage crew and there's no unions to deal with. So now we kind of...
And it's 2 hours long.
Yeah, there's no editing.
Not this, don't worry.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah. yeah.
But no, right, so we like circuitously ended up in the same place, mm-hmm. but without all the... expensive stuff.
It's like, who was the guy that was Tom Snyder? Like Tom right. Snyder essentially did a podcast, yes. right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like you're a little kid watching this guy and you're like, what the hell is he doing? What is this? He's just this right, eccentric right. guy. I don't know
the
who that
too
is.
Too close it's to like, his head.
Do you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
it
yeah.
was like, is this like a Fernwood Tonight kind of thing? What's going on here? And so that's what podcasts are. Except for there's a bazillion of them, right? Mm-hmm. And my 17-year-old son falls asleep listening to podcasts.
Yeah, that's how we counteract loneliness now. And you're right, that was what late night was before.
Or a white noise machine.
Yeah.
That's my podcast. I go to bed too.
Right. I'm Mike Sweeney.
Hi. Yeah. I like to do Jim doing me. Hi, Jim. Yeah. Yes, Jim. Good
That's
to see you.
You've been doing this whole time.
That's right. I had no idea. I thought it was me. It's Jim doing me.
So do you feel like you've stepped away from, like, do you, if you're asked to be in a late night show now, yeah. do you even care? Because you have, now you have so many, you're so prolific and you have all these specials that are coming out and you can promote them on your website. It's almost like you have this whole infrastructure too, where you don't even need to do those appearances in a way, right? Or do you feel that way?
I mean,
that's evolving?
I mean, I wonder if some of it is, it's so crazy because how important they were.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like the appearing on Letterman or
right.
doing a Conan set was not a huge accolade, but it reaffirmed you as a real comedian. Right.
Yeah.
And so I think there's remnants of that with me. It's also fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, but it is weird. It is weird witnessing the, granted we're, it's hard to measure what, the social media feedback on things. Like I've seen it used to be the social media comments. I mean, granted I used to be more, on top of Twitter, but It's like the people that are watching late night shows now are probably not engaged in social media, if that makes sense.
Right.
So, I'm sure there's, I'm generalizing, but it is interesting. But, one of the things that is, it's kind of a different question, but I feel as though, the podcast experience is so perfect for comedians because it's how we can kind of socialize with other comedians.
Right,
because
right.
If you have, I don't care if you're divorced and living on your own, you can't, like everyone in the entertainment industry is, they're working on this show. Now they're touring, they're doing this or that. So what people don't realize is that comedians kind of talking on podcasts is, and they also are comedians aren't the type of person like just catching up.
Yeah, yeah.
See how there is like, because we were kind of, there was an incubation period where you wouldn't make plans. You would just go to a club and you would see someone know and you'd hang out with them for a little bit.
Till 3 a.m.
And do so, bits and never learn about their lives. Just
Now I know their last name.
Yeah.
Now everyone's going to bed early because they have to get up and do an early morning podcast with another comic. Oh,
right. And so doing the podcast is a great time to hang out with these people.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a justification, and everyone's lives so busy. Someone's in a relationship. It's like your spouse or whatever is like, I have to do this. This is this is part of the job. But
it's
otherwise, my wife would be like, you got to help me with these kids. I'm like, I'm working.
I'm booked.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places. Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
I wanted to ask about Pale Force because you briefly brought that up. But yeah, Jim, you were a part of a kind of long, really long running bit on Late Night with Conan O'Brien that was an animated sketch called Pale Force, where you were superheroes who would solve crimes or fight crime with your paleness.
Yes.
Do you remember how that came about or how that got pitched to you?
Oh yeah. No. And I remember, so my brother-in-law who was Paul Noth, who is he's done a lot of things. He was a cartoonist for the New Yorker. He still is. But he's done graphic novels and he's done a lot of things. He had this. He would come with me. He also wanted to, you know, he looked at, I'm sure he's written on shows and stuff like that. But he would come with me sometimes when I would do Conan. And after one of the shows, he's like, hey, I have this idea for this animated thing we could do on Conan. And I was like, I don't want to, like, I mean, it was such a good gig doing stand-up on Conan. I'm like, I don't want to spoil the well here. I don't want to be, I mean, I can be a nudge, but I don't want to be too much of a nudge. And he's like, well, you know, and he was like, you know, Mike Sweeney, right? And I'm like, yeah, but I don't want him to, like, when he sees me, be like, I don't want him to be sad when he sees me. I want him to be happy.
Here's the guy pitching the nepotism
he
cartoon.
Won't shut up. Yeah.
His brother-in-law's running his life.
It was all Paul's idea. Mm. And we worked on it a little bit, kind of presenting it. And we brought it up to Mike and Jeff Ross. Yeah. And it was one of those things where, you know, they tried it out. And it is kind of, you know, there is something like Conan's so self-deprecating and the paleness thing was something that I kind of addressed in my stand-up. And there was a time when I was doing stand-up and Phil Hoffman was on and Conan, and it was just, I remember addressing how there was just like so many pale people in kind of my inside voice thing. And so we kind of brought it up, and, you know, it's like, and then Mike was nice enough to kind of go, all right, I'll see what we can do here, you know? Right. And, so we did it and it worked.
Well,
it's so funny because
I just pitched it to Conan and he was like, well, yeah, that sounds like the idea. I think he was
Conan
just
was like, I get to be a superhero.
I know. I think he was so excited. Yeah, guest was going to do all this extra homework.
Well, that's the other thing I was going to say
and he loved the
writers
idea.
On the show. It's like, oh no, please take all the time you need, Mr. Gaffigan.
Right. Exactly. Well, you know, that's a guest. That's it was so a fun. Guest segment. So it really didn't help with all the other stuff.
Yeah,
it was like,
true. Yeah,
okay, sure. Make your cartoon. But Conan loved the idea. And then it was a giant, the first one just killed.
Yeah.
So that was, then it was.
And it was also, and then we were like, we're going to do this. I mean, it's so weird in this day and age of where many people are consuming this by watching the video. But we had this idea that we would do half the episode on the show and half would be on NBC.com.
Right.
Oh.
Because this was like 2005.
Yeah,
so it's like, oh my God, the internet.
Yeah, this is when Netflix was maybe, they were thinking of doing streaming, right? They were the mailman. Yes. Yeah. There would always be a throw to NBC.com. Right. And then we'd be at home watching and we'd be like, all right, let's go to NBC.com. It never worked.
Great.
And it was,
they didn't have the bandwidth.
Well, because the technology wasn't there.
Yeah.
You know,
we can't host videos.
They got their act together. Oh, wait, it doesn't exist.
It was amazing. Yeah. But animation's, and obviously, again, my brother-in-law, Paul.
Yeah, how did he just animate it himself? Paul. That's
he worked
usually
with
a full team of
He drew a lot of it. I think the first one, he pretty much did everything.
Wow.
And then we did another one, and then it became this series idea, you know, where I would come back. And I was coming back like once a month.
Yes. Right? I was looking at the dates. You were also, prior to this, coming back every 2 months doing stand-up, which is...
Wow.
Like, I saw one where you're on in June, and then you're on in... You're on 3 months later, and I'm like, wow,
residency.
I think it was just like, come back, please come back whenever you're available.
Yeah, but I love doing it. And, and it was really, I mean, I think that contributed, like the frequency of doing these late night spots. I was essentially clean, but it was, you know, there were some curse words, but if you're getting ready to do a TV set where you can't obviously curse, then you have to sit there and get rid of the curse word. So I was like, I'm just going to get rid of it before I write it now. And
that's interesting.
That kind of steered me in a way to like, I mean, it's not like I was, cursing every other phrase, but it was those Conan spots where it was, all right, you got 4 minutes. And it was also like making sure that, you also wanted it to be easy. You wanted to deliver and you didn't want someone to be like, because that is also funny with like some comedians. They're like, it is clean. I don't say anything. I just talk about eating pussy. And you're like, that is not clean.
Yeah, yeah.
I say labia.
Like, but I don't curse. You're like, it's actually not just about cursing.
Right.
You know what I mean? So.
No, but that's really interesting that you kind of started writing specifically for TV spots.
Yes. Well, and again, that was way more important than, a Comedy Central. I mean, Comedy Central, you could get a half hour, but, and I think that was probably like the blue collar guys were exploding, but appearing on Conan, Letterman, and The Tonight Show. But really, it was Conan and Letterman, wasn't it? If Jay Leno's listening to this, I don't want him to feel bad. But
Jay's our biggest fan. He loves all Conan.
Of course, he's like...
He's always hoping he's going to come up.
He has all our merch.
Do you know any of the history?
Jim.
But, also, I like him feeling bad when he listens to this.
Yeah.
Oh, it hurt my feelings.
No. I think among comics, Letterman and then Conan became kind of a hot place for stand-ups to start making their first appearance on, after a bit. So, but that, I love that you had that discipline, because most comics, it's like, you're going on every night in a club in probably in New York City, and the pressure to want to swear just... to ingratiate yourself with that live crowd.
Yeah.
But you were like able to kind of say, okay, which I think is really hard to do.
Power.
Yeah, and that's seriously.
NBC it's standards and practices.
That's right. I want to get an NBC.com when it works. But it's very impressive though. That's cool. Mm-hmm. So really Conan is the reason you got to open up for the Pope.
He is the only reason.
Good.
It is.
If we learn anything from
what
this.
Weird. It's the Pope thing is so weird because, it's such an absurd idea.
Right.
They're like, the Pope's coming to Philadelphia. And they're like, we should probably get a comedian to open.
I know.
And it's just
different genres.
And I had a whole story on it in a special, but there's also something about the Northeast. I love the Northeast, but like, Philadelphia, Boston, Long Island, they're not, there were people there that were, eventually I did a joke where I kind of like said, you guys are so nice. You're going to be nice to the Pope, right? I see what you did to Santa Claus. And they started booing. They started booing me before they saw the guy who was going to talk to them about mercy.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It was just like, but there is something about the Northeast that I love so much.
Right.
There's an authenticity, like there's not an editing, but it's so absurd that someone, because there's situations where you can't, like irreverence is really, it's inappropriate. You know what I mean? It's like, if you're like, no one's going to be like, what do you think of the opening acts for the Pope? No one's going to be like, I thought it's just like, if you're sarcastic, you're being inappropriate to some people. And then other people are like, he's really holding back. You know what I mean? It's like, I thought he was going to roast the Pope.
Yeah. he's pulling his punches.
They're not letting Gaffigan be Gaffigan. I never thought about that. It was in Philadelphia, which is hilarious.
My God.
Just like one of the toughest.
That's terrifying. It's terrifying.
There's that legendary Bill Burr gig outdoors in Philly where like, I don't know, four or five other comics went on. So he knew the deal. Like, I'm sure the first comic, that's the problem when you're the first comic or the first two comics, you're like, you just assume it's you and and you're like, I failed. But then the other comics watching, you're like, oh no, that comic's really good. The crowd blows. Oh. And by the time he went out there, he just went insane. It's great. It's funny.
The Pope was probably thinking that.
I know. Then Bill Burr introduced the Pope. The Pope loves Philly.
Yeah.
He loves to headline. And he's always passing through.
He loves playing Philly. But
it's like that. That is that whole comedy as combat.
Right.
Was kind of a thing that existed in 90s New York City comedy.
Very much in New York.
Where like it's, you know, because now it's the audience is more educated on what stand-up is and what the experience is supposed to be. But I think in the early 90s, people were like, are we supposed to heckle? We're supposed to. I saw Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah.
You know they like it.
And then, so it was.
But it was so city in a to way, city. Sorry, go ahead. In a way.
Yeah. No, I was going to say that too. It's like, I feel like when I finally went to DC and I did the DC improv and people were laughing at certain things. I was like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe audiences are, you know, there's a different expectation. It's a different experience.
It is regional. It's like the audiences in Chicago, like a lot of comics would move to New York from Chicago and none of them were sarcastic. And I was like, wow, it's almost like a reflection of what their audience is like. And then I went to San Francisco and I never saw audiences that great in my life. I was just like, why every comedian should move to San Francisco? Because they're like theater crowds. They're just smart and engaged.
It seems like crazy. How Olympic athletes train in Denver because at the altitude, then whenever they go anywhere else, they're going to be in the best shape of their lives. So, I mean, you guys starting out in these cities on the East Coast,
right?
That are tougher crowds.
Unless you're like, you know, disciplined, you can just develop really bad habits and kind of get into the muck. Like,
and fight with them.
And then you go to another city and everyone's like, why is this guy yelling at us?
This isn't our fault.
Is he being such an asshole to us?
Right. It also can evolve. Like, I remember when pot became, you know, like pot was first legal in Colorado. And Denver was a big drinking city. Chicago, you know, like there are certain cities where you're like, people are just going to be bombed. You know what I mean? It's just an expectation, particularly on late shows. And so I remember I did Denver and I had been going to Denver for a while. And so they made pot legal and there was this meet and greet. You do these theaters and like if they paid a certain amount, you would do a meet and greet with 50 of them. Mm-hmm. And it was probably maybe 3 months after pot had been legal. And at the meet and greet, you know, usually there would be somebody drunk, maybe like one or two people drunk out of 50. At the Denver, the first time I did it, I'm not kidding. Like half the audience was being carried because pot was legal. So people were like taking an edible and they were smoking this really, these really powerful weed. And so like people were carrying their date through the meet and greet. And it was because they had this Denver let's party attitude, but they were doing it with weed.
Right.
And it was right at the beginning. So it was like,
it was
fascinating to witness that change. Yeah.
The next day they were like, did I meet Jim Gaffigan? Yes, you did.
We saw that show.
Right.
Yeah. Those seem like not great audiences. The really high audiences.
Yeah.
I mean, they're definitely not combative, you know, but it was just so, it's like, you know, it's like amazing to see because like, just, you know, it's like the pot that we smoked as teenagers, half the time it wasn't pot.
Right. It was oregano.
It was just some shit that some jerk sold us. And so, but like now it's like the purest stuff in the world. Some people are just not used to it.
Right. So. Our tolerances are low.
Yes.
I'm surprised they have money for those meet and greets with all the money they're spending on drugs.
Drugs.
I call them drugs. I'm an old man.
Well, Jim, I know we have to wrap up with you soon, but we definitely want to talk about your new special, Dark Pale. It's on Amazon. Anything we need to know?
It's dark. It's a little dark.
It's dark.
I'm going to answer for Jim.
You know, there is...
Which I loved.
There is
I loved
something...
It.
Yeah. Oh, thanks so much.
Yeah.
There is something about... I think the pandemic going through the pandemic, you know... There is a certain cynicism that we all kind of encountered.
Right.
And, you know, like for me, it's, you know, I'm not saying I would edit or hold back on some of my misanthropic tendencies, but it was, so I was kind of, I'm going to be a little bit more dark than maybe I have previously, or more dark than in selective instances, you know. And but, you know, comedians, you're always kind of hopefully evolving. So, and it's a, you know, I do think that doing stand up and people consuming your stand up, that it should evolve, it should change. Mm-hmm. And you know, like sometimes I'm like, all right, I'm going to tell a story here. It's like, all right, the challenge of like, all right, I'm going to try and make funerals funny. You know what I mean? Not that people haven't heard funeral jokes, but like, you know, it's, you know, we've all gone through this. And I think human beings, we can't exist in that devastation of a funeral, but there is humor in that experience. But again, we can't live in the reality that, you know, people we love are going to die. Right. But like some of it is going through the pandemic. We had to face that reality.
Right.
Many of us did, you know, like I lost my aunt during it and, you know, a couple friends later on. So it was just kind of one of those things where it was, I guess, top of mind. So I just kind of, you know, wrote about it.
Well, that's why I thought it was so ingenious. You started out kind of like, oh, here we are coming out. We're all out of COVID. And then you were talking about, yeah, like how everyone became so callous during COVID. And then I just thought it was ingenious that was your kind of your spring. You're right there talking about people dying during COVID and, you know, the new tally coming out and blah, blah. And then boom, right into the funeral stuff. And I was like, oh, that's such a great natural way into all thanks. That darker stuff.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. And then I segue into diarrhea. Always, always good to do some diarrhea stuff.
Well,
that's
eternal.
It can be dark or light.
You know, and
keep it highbrow, right?
Exactly.
You know, it's like you want to stay in the, you know, you want the Peabody, something for the Peabody judges, right?
If you look at Peabody, things that have won Peabody, the diarrhea runs through all the winners. It's
right.
It's a constant.
It's there.
Well, thank you for doing this.
I know. Thank you so much.
It was great seeing you again.
Thanks so much. This was really fun, you guys.
Yeah.
This was fun for us.
Yes.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jim.
Right. Thanks to Jim Gaffigan for joining us and his new special. It's called Dark Pale. It's out now on Prime Video. Go check that out.
And we have a listener question.
Ooh.
This is a very specific one. It's from Michael Lockyer from St. John's, Newfoundland. Hello to you both. Oh, very formal. I've been listening to the podcast since day one and absolutely love all the behind-the-scenes stories. I'm from Newfoundland, Canada, and one of my fondest youthful memories is when Conan got screeched in by Natasha Henstridge in quite an old episode of Late Night.
Oh, it is specific.
I've always wanted to know more about that absolutely hilarious moment on the show. I'm sure Mike was around at the time. Because he's older than Methuselah.
He's always around.
Mm-hmm. He saw it all and remembers none of it. Thanks for all the behind-the-scenes details of my favorite show of about 30 years. Really hope I get to get some details on this probably mostly forgotten moment. I love you, Michael Lockyer.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Michael. We love you too.
We do. I had never seen this clip, so I had to watch this.
Right.
To know what screeching in even is.
I had no idea.
It sounds so Canadian.
I was in the same boat with you. So we looked up screeched in is something very specific to Newfoundland. Mm-hmm. Supposedly it's like if you're visiting Newfoundland, it's a drinking ritual to make you a temporary Newfie.
Oh, I mean, it's basically a drinking. It's an excuse for drinking.
It's an excuse for drinking. Natasha Henstridge is from Newfoundland. So she came on the show and she made Conan drink some screech rum. And I guess there's a poem you read. And Conan, I think it was so funny because Conan just started, of course, drinking the rum straight out of the bottle. Yeah. And the other aspect of it, it's hard to tell from watching the clip, but Conan's first baby had just been born 2 days earlier. And it was his first show back from his baby being born. And he didn't really take a paternity leave.
Wow, 2 days?
Yeah. And oh, so
his wife was thrilled.
Yeah. Well, listen, he had to,
the people needed money. Late night.
Exactly. People needed
He's an essential worker on the front lines. Okay. Well, thank you for the question and the memories, Michael.
And okay, I have to give a little update. Oh. At the top of the show, I was talking about Altadena house shopping.
Right, where Sona lives.
And the housing market. Yeah, where Sona lives.
Yeah.
And I mentioned that we were able to afford a house there with a pool.
Yes.
Well, I have an update because within the time that we've been recording,
yes,
that house sold for way over the asking price, out of our budget.
Ugh.
So we already can't afford to live in Altadena anymore.
I thought you were going to say you bought a house in Altadena.
That I bought the house. Yeah. I wish that's what I was going to say.
Well,
no, I just wanted to say if anyone was listening, was like, oh, I'm going to go buy a house in Altadena.
Right.
You already missed it. It's too late.
The window
closed. Market is already through the roof.
The market's supposed to be going down the tubes. What's happening?
No, it's worse than ever.
They, you know what? You mentioned that Sona lives there, and now that's when everyone started.
That's right.
Bidding above
got the Sona
asking.
Bump.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell her that that's what she's done.
Sure, she ruined the
little
an entire,
cute little Altadena. Ugh. Is now going to turn into Venice Beach,
Sonaville.
Yeah.
Like Potterville. And it's a wonderful life.
Well, that's our show.
You're going to find a better house somewhere else.
Yeah, I'm going to go even further into the mountains.
You're going to move up to, what is that? Lancaster.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. That's only a 2 hour commute.
Let's look in Lancaster. Oh, it's already out of our budget.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Bakersfield.
All right. I'm Googling Nope. That's a whole.
Damn. Fresno. Gilroy, the garlic capital of California. Oh,
if only.
You'll actually be closer to San Francisco, but
yeah.
I'll fly up there and we'll do it up there. Have fun in Gilroy.
I have to move to Nevada. I don't know.
Would you live in Nevada?
Oh.
I don't know. Do you like to gamble?
No.
I don't know.
No, I don't.
Okay.
I once found a poker chip on the ground and I cashed it out.
Oh, I hope you were in a casino.
I was in a casino.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
No, I don't gamble.
All right. I know how to get us to the end of a podcast by bringing up, so you wouldn't live in Nevada. Let me ask you this, Montana. How about Utah? Let's jump to the East Coast now. Anyway, we got to wrap this up. Thank you, Michael. That was, I could see why you remember that clip. It was really funny. And if anyone else has a question for us, please give us a call at 323-209-1079 or email us at insideconanpod@gmail.com.
And if you call, don't worry. No one's going to answer. It's just
right.
It's just a voicemail box.
Is it even that?
I
assume it was disconnected.
I've been too afraid to call.
Disconnected 4 years ago, and our producer makes up all these questions. But either way, give it a try. You never know.
Oh, and if you like the show, you can feel free to support us by rating Inside Conan on iTunes and leaving us a review. It could be negative.
That's right. No.
We're not going to monitor it.
Well, you know, our rating of you isn't negative. You are listeners. In fact, it's the highest rating.
So positive that we love you.
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell.
Our producer is Lisa Burr.
Team Coco's executive producers are Adam Sachs, Jeff Ross, and Nick Liao.
Engineered and mixed by Joanna Samuel.
Our talent bookers are Gina Batista and Paula Davis, with assistance from Maddie Ogden.
Thanks to Jimmy Vivino for our theme music and interstitials.
You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan, or an enemy, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.
I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Put on your hat, it's the Conan Show. Try on some spats, you're gonna have a laugh. Give birth to a calf, it's Conan!
This has been a Team Coco production.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.